Hello, you're listening to Speaking of History, the podcast with a focus on education, technology, and history.
The luckiest man on the face of the earth.
Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor.
Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream today.
This would have fighting power.
Hello, welcome to Speaking of History. My name is Eric Langhorst. I'm an 8th grade American history teacher in Liberty, Missouri, and you're listening to a podcast with a focus on education, technology, and history. Today's episode is number 180, and I'm recording this on March 4th, 2009. Well, earlier this week, I was able to give a presentation to parents and students at Platte County Schools in Platte City, Missouri. They had an academic banquet for all the students that received high marks on their recent state standardized test, and I gave a short little presentation on opportunity to both parents and students, and I brought along my Sony recorder and recorded the presentation, and that's going to be the podcast tonight. I did kind of level out the audio using Levelator, so I'm kind of a little bit in front of the mic at different times, walking in front of the stage and kind of talking to the audience a little bit. But I tried to kind of level out the audio as much as I could. So without further ado, this is a presentation that I did on Opportunity on March 2nd, 2009 in Platte City, Missouri.
Now to our guest speaker. Eric Langhorst teaches 8th grade American history at South Valley Junior High School in Liberty, Missouri. Teaches a graduate course at Clark University entitled Technology for the Classroom. He has been a classroom teacher for the past 15 years in both small rural schools and a large suburban district. Eric serves as Social Studies Department Chair, sits on several district technology committees, is on the Board of Directors for Clay County Historical Society. Recent recognitions include the 2007-2008 Missouri School Teacher of the Year, 2006 National Cable Leaders in Learning Award, 2005 Global Microsoft Innovative Teacher, 2007 Missouri Governor Humanities Award for Education, and named to the 2006 National School Board Association's 20 to Watch List for Educational Leadership and Technology Integration. Since 2005, he has produced the Speaking of History podcast with over 175 episodes and has visitors from over 155 different countries. He has had articles about educational technology published in a variety of publications, including School Library Journal, Educational Leadership, and School and Community. Eric has worked with PBS, the History Channel, Microsoft, Cable in the Classroom on various projects. Eric is the husband of Jamie, and they have two daughters, Addison and Scarlett. In his spare time, what little he has of it, he enjoys watching baseball, football, supporting the Huskers, reading, and travel. Please welcome Eric.
My 5-year-old thinks that I'm an American Idol, so I don't. Today I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about opportunity, and when I heard that I was going up to speak to a group of students along with their parents, I was really excited because so many times parents aren't recognized. And I was going to have all the parents stand up, and I'm not going to have you guys stand up again. But I want to talk a little bit about opportunities today, both from the perspective of opportunities that are given to us, and then also opportunities that we then have to follow through on. So I'm going to start by just looking at the definition of opportunity, a possibility due to a favorable combination of circumstances. And as we talk first about the conditions that have brought you here today, I think you really first need to thank your parents. I hope that you guys as students really do appreciate all that your parents do. I'm a parent, and everybody told me before I became a parent, you just kind of say, oh, yeah. But once you actually become a parent, and you have kids of your own, you really start to understand the sacrifices and all the little things that you do for your kids that you don't ever recognize until you're parents yourself. So at some point, I hope that everybody here does tonight at some point thank your parents for what you do. You have no idea some of the background stuff and the sacrifices they do to help you out. This is my family, and this is my youngest. I'll use this picture because the rest of us look really nice, except our youngest, until she gets old enough to say, yeah, quit using that picture where I'm screaming and I'm not smiling. But this is my wife, Jamie, my oldest, or our oldest, Addison, and then Scarlett. And it's been really unique over the last couple of years, learning how they learn and then trying to help them become successful. So I really appreciate what you've done for your family. So I actually didn't want to start smiling, so those are my two kids. But my journey, as far as where I'm at today, really started before even my own parents. My parents were extremely supportive. But when I talk about how I got to be where I am today, it has to first start with how I became an American citizen. And even though we're in a really tough financial situation, I think most of us in the room would agree that we live in the greatest country in the world. And I remember an interview that Warren Buffett did a couple of years ago, and the interviewer asked him, what's the single most important factor to you becoming successful? In essence, becoming the richest man in America. And he said, I won the Ovarian Lottery. And the interviewer said, well, what do you mean by the Ovarian Lottery? He said, well, when I was born in 1930, there was a 1 in 50 chance that I was going to be an American citizen or that I'd be a citizen of some other country. And my parents were Americans. And that's made basically the biggest difference in how I've been able to become successful in my life is because I've been born an American citizen. Now, the reason why I'm an American citizen is because of this gentleman right here. That's my grandfather, Henry C. Langhorst. This is a picture from World War I. He was a German Marine in World War I. And this is actually in the trenches up by Flanders. And my grandfather was a German boy growing up, got drafted into Vietnam, fought in World War I, survived the trenches, survived all the horrible things that happened in the war, and then the German economy just completely collapsed. And he was faced with basically little opportunity to be a farmer in Germany. And so he decided to come to America at the age of 26 with his brother. He could speak no English and had basically a faint promise of a job as a farmhand in Nebraska if he could get to America. So my grandfather got on a boat, came to the United States in 1923, came through Ellis Island, was processed through Ellis Island. As he was waiting to get his train ticket, his trunk was stolen, and he had all his worldly possessions in it. So he literally came across the United States to get to Nebraska with nothing except the clothes that he had on. But my grandfather and his brother, as they were going across on this train, they kept stopping at all these small towns. And everybody had picnics going on, and people were celebrating, there was American flags everywhere. And they kept looking at each other saying, oh my gosh, you know, I cannot believe how wonderful this country is. Well, they found out shortly after that that they were coming across the United States on July 4th. And not every day was going to be picnics in July. But my grandfather raised five kids, three of which became servicemen in the military of the United States. And this past summer, that's my grandpa and I, and that's about 5 or so. But this last fall, I was able to go to Ellis Island, and his name is engraved on the wall of immigrants there at Ellis Island. So I was able to sit in the Great Hall and look out and see the Statue of Liberty that when I remember my grandfather talking about, he would have tears coming down his face. This tough grass farmer would see the Statue of Liberty, and he'd start to cry. So I know if I pass the microphone throughout this auditorium, almost all of you probably have some type of family story about somebody that gave you the opportunity to be an American citizen. And that just happens to be mine. But somewhere down the road, somebody had to make a really tough choice. I can't imagine leaving my family and going across the world, say, somewhere in Asia or India or whatever, just because it promised me a greater opportunity. But that's exactly what my grandfather did. And that's why I've been able to be successful as an American teacher. Alright, and then the other thing I try to instill to my students is a lot of the ideals behind the other people that have given us the opportunity to be in a free democracy. And so this is my classroom, and when you come to my classroom, you see these white paper chains on the top, and people always ask, well, what is, you know, what do those mean, and what do they represent? And about Veterans Day this last year, I wanted to do something to visually give my students an idea of how many people have sacrificed their life through the military in a time of war to give us the opportunity we have today to learn in a free democracy. So I went and did some research, and we found out that about 650,000 servicemen and women have given their life in wartime from the start of our nation's history until today. And so each one of these chains represents about 465 servicemen. And we have 1,400 chains on the top of our ceiling in our classroom. So I just kind of like to see that as a visual reminder and help my students remember that, you know, the opportunities they have are not just free. Some of these sacrifices are quite a bit. So we have a lot of parents saying that. Could I have anybody that's been in the military and served in our military stand up for just a second? Because I think that's important to be recognized. So those opportunities are opportunities that people have given us. We don't even know in some cases, but we're able to basically benefit from all their hard work. Now, my students in the crowd, can anybody tell me what this document is? What is that document?
The Declaration.
Ah, it's the Declaration of Independence. It's a special version of one. Anybody know what version it is?
It's the rough draft and special of the Declaration of Independence.
Right, it's the rough draft. Declaration of Independence. Now, if I have teachers in the crowd, I wish that they would put this next to the real Declaration of Independence in the archives, because whenever we tell our students that we revise their work and all that stuff, wouldn't it be awesome if the rough draft was like right next to the actual final beautiful copy? Because you can see where he's actually crossed out, you know, different things, separate and equal, you know, he put that in with a little carrot on top of it. So, I mean, this is real stuff. This is in the Library of Congress. When I teach the Declaration of Independence, I have a great opportunity to share the story of American history. And I teach eighth grade American history, and a lot of times the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they get all kind of mixed together. So I've done this little thing the last 3 or 4 years. When I'm teaching the Declaration of Independence, I have my students come in, and I teach 6 different classes throughout the day. And I take roll like I usually do, but then I've got this wadded up piece of paper, folded up piece of paper in my hand. And I say, hey guys, you know, I'm a little upset today because I keep picking up notes on the floor. And I'm just really tired of constantly picking up, you know, your trash and stuff. You know, I'm not taking care of, you know, your room, I'm not your mom, I'm going to pick up all your stuff. And then I say, what I typically do is, I read this, and if it's a note, it embarrasses the person that wrote it enough, they'll never write a note again. And then I go, but I'm not going to do it today, because we've got too much stuff to do, and I put it in my pocket. And this is all staged. I'm not usually really upset at the beginning of class. I can really tell. I'm really, you know, upset this particular day. So I start putting my pocket, and then what do my state grade students do? They beg me to read. They're like, you've got to read it, Mr. Langhorst. I'm like, hey, this could be really embarrassing for you. They're like, I know, it could be really embarrassing for you. So I go ahead and I fold it, and I start looking at it, and I'm like, I can't. And they're begging me at this point, you've got to read it. So I go ahead and read it, and it's a note that I've written ahead of time. And it talks about how things were once great for kids. Everybody thought that we'd last forever. Everybody thought that, you know, we'd always be together. And, you know, but lately you kind of take me for granted. You know, you don't really listen to me anymore. All this stuff. And then I use these little, you know, little I am message stuff. Like in part there it says, I put in there, it was like we were in MFBO. But I go, what does that mean? And then one kid, what does that mean? MFBO, it was like we were made for each other. Okay? So I'm like playing along. So then I go through this whole thing, and then at the bottom, I say, but I can't read. It says, I really think that we need time away from each other. I think we need to break up, and I think that you are the reason why. And then I pulled it up, and at that point, they're like, oh, you've got to tell us you wrote this. And so then finally, I pulled it out, and I said, oh, it's signed, the American Colonists. And then they're like, and I said, well, open up your textbook to page 450. And every textbook in America ever published has a Declaration of Independence. No one ever reads it. Okay? So now they open up to page 450 and they're like, oh my gosh, what this is a Declaration of Independence. Talking about why we broke up, and basically the Declaration of Independence is in the public breakup letter that says, I'm breaking up with you, and not only am I breaking up with you, I'm putting a list of reasons why. King of England. So that's how we teach the Declaration of Independence. The other cool thing is, at some point, in every class we've ever done this, like one of my students goes, I know who wrote this. They broke up like 2 days ago. And that's how I pump my students over here. But this is an opportunity for me to share American history. I love what I do. I love the ability that I have to come in and teach the story of American history. Right now we're sitting in the American frontier, and when they were going across on the plains and then they first settled and stuff, there weren't very many trees. And so one of the things that they used for fuel instead of trees, somebody? Buffalo down. Yes, buffalo hogs, okay? Buffalo chips. So, I had my dad pick up a bunch of buffalo chips last week in Nebraska when they came down to visit. My dad has lost that for me. And so we're going to have, once they dry, we're going to have a buffalo chip s'more party some night after school. Basically just ripping off of you. Whether you're in middle school or you're in high school right now, in the next 10 years or so, you guys are going to have more opportunities than you'll probably ever have for the rest of your life, okay? And you live in a very exciting time because you, no matter if you're living here and you're going to school here at Flat County, or if you're living in a small town somewhere, or you're living in a city, you have the ability through technology to be able to collaborate with different people, connect with people, learn from people. Did you know that you can get online and you can go to the MIT site and you can look at any lecture at MIT? The same education that costs basically like $40,000 a year. You can see and you can watch and listen to the best lectures in the world, whether it's about physics or anatomy. They obviously don't give you the diploma at the end, but you can gain knowledge from looking at all those lectures. Okay? That little Declaration of Independence thing that I just talked about. There's something called the flip cam. It's about this big. And so this year when I did that, I stuck it behind my desk and I videotaped the whole thing. And so from the time my kids came into class until I told them that they just got pumped, I've got it on tape. And so I put it on my blog that I did called Speaking of History, where I just basically talk about what we do in class, share ideas and stuff. That video's been up for 3 months. And it's been viewed over 1,000 times by other teachers. And I get emails from people all over the world saying, hey, I did that same thing, and guess what? I also had a kid say, I know who that is. So I'm putting that up on YouTube for free, okay? I've been able to share what I did in my classroom. I also steal tons of ideas from other people on through that same technology. There's a person that just wrote a book called Disrupting the Class, and they talk about how they predict that in the year 2012, that half of all high school classes taught in America will be taught online. Okay? And that's not that far away. We've got like 3 or 4 years to predict that possibly half, if we don't get enough teachers, so that delivery of content is going to have to run through online stuff. I'm going back to school tonight. This is my first day as a new student. I'm starting to work on my doctorate, and I'm taking it completely online. I've got a 1-year-old and a 5-year-old. Okay, so this is going to help me out a lot to be able to do this online. I'm going home tonight. I'm going to drive back to Liberty, put on some sweatpants, get some hot chocolate, basically in my pajamas, meet my classmates for the first time. I'm going to be able to go online, check out their assignments after this week. I'm going to be able to do it from my pajamas. Okay? Pretty incredible times that we live in today. Okay, this is a stat from the U.S. Department of Labor. Today's students will have 10 to 14 jobs before they turn 38 years old. 10 to 14 jobs. So the content that you guys are learning is really important, but also the skills that you're learning are important. Because this is another statistic that came out by former Education Secretary Riley. None of the jobs on the top 10 list for 2010 as far as in-demand jobs, none of those jobs existed in 2004. Okay, so we're not only teaching you guys in school concepts of math and language arts and stuff, we're also trying to teach you guys things like collaboration and cooperation and problem solving, because you guys are going to solve the problems that we're going to need to have solved in the next 10, 20, 30 years. So not only study the content, but also listen to your teacher and they're trying to have you guys work with wondering, you know, why are we doing this kind of stuff? Because you guys are going to give me problems that we don't know the answers, and we're going to need you guys to solve. Now, the last thing I want to leave you guys with, especially the high school students, is that don't confuse wealth with happiness when you guys are trying to figure out what you want to do for a living. Okay? I know I talked to a lot of high school students, I talked to a lot of junior high students, and a lot of them are really obsessed with just finding a job that will give them the most possible money. Okay? And that's important as far as having enough money to support your family and that kind of stuff. But when you're thinking about what you want to do for the next 50 years of your life, really think about what your passion is and what you enjoy to do. I love what I do for a living. I love going to school every day. Well, not every day, but most of the time. Some days are not as fun as others. The days that you are in Buffalo are really exciting. But I'm not a millionaire baseball player. Okay? I'm not making tons of money. I live in a modest house. And, you know, we get, you know, buy what we do. But I'm also very happy. And so I think that especially in the current economic situation we're in right now, you know, sometimes money is really kind of blown out of proportion. Find something that you really want to do. And you live in a time period where you can do it almost anywhere in the world. A lot of it's going to be technology-based. If you can find something that you want to do, you're going to be much happier than just finding a job that will pay you a lot of money at the end of the day. So that's my spiel for today. Thank you for having me come up to Clark County. The facility is awesome. I love talking to the people that I talked to. I had a great meal tonight. And I just really wish you guys a lot of good rest of the school year. And again, thanks for working so hard on those tests. Tests are just one thing to measure how well you're doing in school. But it's one way to show that you guys are really working hard. And I know that your administrators are appreciative of that. And it's going to get you a lot of opportunity. Thanks.
The Speaking of History podcast is produced by Eric Langhorst, an 8th grade American history teacher at South Valley Junior High in Liberty, Missouri. This podcast has a Creative Commons Attribution non-commercial license. Show notes, links, videos, and pictures are available at www.speakingofhistory.blogspot.com. Music used in the intro and close is Technotrip, a track by Sounds Abound. You can learn more about their royalty-free music for schools at their website, www.soundzabound.com. Comments or questions about the podcast are always welcome, and you can contact Eric at speakingofhistory@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and please remember, history is so much more than just a bunch of boring old dead guys. Bye.